Hi, I'm Shauna Meyerson. I'm that Jew without trembling knees and with the Yoga of War podcast. I'm here today with that original Jew, Eitan Chittayat. Did I say that okay?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. If you appreciate and find value in these important discussions, please consider supporting the show so I could continue to bring you such amazing and esteemed guests. Details will be pinned in the comments below. If you don't already know who Eitan is, he's that Jew who woke up the world with this. Give me a second as I cue it, because my technical capabilities are so spectacular. Okay, sorry. That did not go as seamlessly as I was hoping it would.
It never does.
Here we go. Let's do this.
I'm that always writing Jew, that footnote citing Jew, that academic Jew, scholar Jew, that thinking Jew. And let me tell you something, Jew. Worker Jew, white collar Jew, that tend the flock and herd of Jew, that calloused foot and hand Jew, that roam the barren sands Jew, that tills and works the land Jew. That old Jew, new Jew, that makes the desert grow Jew, that always trying to make things just a little better Jew. At the same time, don't mind if I'm a self-centered Jew, and that persistence sweated out Jew, that I made it big because I earned it Jew, that give me what I want because I know that I deserve it Jew, that arrogant Jew, that humble Jew, that whatever Jew I'm in the mood to be Jew, just like you, that oh yes, I'm just getting started Jew, and that Israeli Jew, that Caribbean Jew, that English Indian Sephardic Jew, that Ashkenazi blonde and blue-eyed, no, I'm not a Shiksa Jew, New York Jew, LA Jew, Australia and Ukraine Jew, that Russian, South African, Ethiopian, and French, je suis juif Jew, that proud of being Jewish Jew, that Jesus Jew, Judas Jew, that don't know why I'm still being persecuted Jew, scapegoat Jew, that whenever we're murdered, you probably think we had it coming Jew, but still, not afraid to wear my Star of David, Am Yisrael Chai Jew. And that feeling the world has gone mad, and damn it, I want to get off Jew. That way too much horror in the news everywhere I turn Jew. That fed up with ISIS beheading Christians, knife-wielding, suicide-bombing lunatics Jew. That disgusted by Boko Haram, Boston Marathon, Lynn Cafe, Pakistani school children killers, and I've had enough of radical Islam to last me a lifetime Jew. That they're killing so many of their own, but somehow we're blamed for that too, Jew. That wake-up world, Jew. And that you don't want to hear this, but I don't give a damn what you think, Jew. That you're just going to have to deal with it, Jew. That bullied in high school, Jew, because I was rocking a yarmulke, Jew. That standing up to you, Jew. That talk to the hand, Jew. And that Iron Dome cheering fan club, where were you when the missiles were raining down on Tel Aviv, Jew? That just shalom motherfucked you off my Facebook page, Jew. That sick of your double standards, Jew. That UN today equals useless nations to me, Jew. That will fight it out if you have a problem with me, Jew. And yet, I'm that desperately wanting to live side by side in peace with you, Jew. That get to know me, and you'll see we're not so bad like they make us out to be, Jew. Bingo. And that, who knew, Jew? And that needing to explain, Jew. That let's figure it out together, Jew. That questioning, Jew. The never ever just one answer, Jew. That contemplative, Jew. That wild hair genius, Jew. That psychoanalytical, and let me tell you something about you and your mother, Jew, that never claimed to be perfect Jew. And that shelf sagging with Nobel Prizes, Jew, that brilliant scientist, Jew, that astronaut, Jew, that inventor of something that's part of your everyday life, but you don't even know it, Jew. But I'm also that, let's laugh it up, Jew, that I'm on a boat and it's good to be the king, Jew. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but I'm the new rules in your face, butt kicking, sassy, sexy, smart Wonder Woman, Jew. That Harvard actress, director, and Princess Leia's mother all rolled into one Jew. That fiddler on the roof, always performing, but damn, I'm gone too soon, Jew. And that lox and bagel noshing Jew. That falafel and hummus eating Jew. That couscous, schnitzel, latkes, and matzo ball soup Jew. And that only liberal democracy in the Middle East Jew. And that became a refugee when my ancestors were kicked out of Arab lands Jew. And that political Jew. That activist Jew. That gay Jew and female rabbi Jew. That eat a Big Mac. But I won't touch bacon, Jew. That looking for the truth, forever wandering, Jew. that just want to get married under chuppah and break a glass under my heel Jew. And that Merry Christmas, Ramadan Kareem, have a good whatever you're celebrating Jew. And that Hindu high-fiving, Sikh fist-pumping, Christian-loving, Muslim-friend-having, Buddhist and Baha'i, I'd love to get to know you better Jew. And that religious Jew, that secular-loving my heritage Jew, that brother-in-arms Jew, hero Jew, soldier-turned olive branch holding Jew, that put three bullets in my back, but you won't kill my dream Jew, that yearning for peace, and I've never been to Israel, but I'll get there someday because it's my homeland Jew, that almost 6,000 years and I'm still standing Jew, that Hatikva singing with a tear in my eye Jew, and that won't apologize for surviving Jew, that fighting for my rights Jew, that number one and number 6 million and every number in between Jew, that learned from what happened to us in the Holocaust Jew, that never, ever again Jew, and that wish there were more of us Jew, that creative Jew, business funk and folk Jew, that dancer Jew, painter Jew, that Taylor Baker wedding singer Jew, that neurotic Jew, part Jew, let love rule, and wannabe honorary Jew, and that lucky father Jew, that husband to a wonderful woman Jew, that son to loving parents who worked hard so I would be happy Jew, that grandson to those who suffered so we would just make it Jew, that thanks to them, I've got my whole life ahead of me Jew, and that everything's got a reason for being, and I'll keep looking for the answer Jew, that writing this to all my Jewish brothers and sisters Jew, and to those who aren't Jewish, but get this and show me love, I'm that writing this to you with utmost respect Jew, and that believer that we're going to be okay because there's no other choice Jew, that hang in there and keep your head up Jew, that human dignity will prevail and the world is made up of decent people Jew, and that believer that the decent people will win in the end Jew, not a wishful thinking Jew, just true Jew.
Now I'm all beclumped. It gets me every time. And yes, I am that Jew who watched that 100 times 10 years ago when it first came out. And for better or for worse, this renaissance of your video is important, but heartbreaking at the same time to see how little changes, and also how much things really change in such a short period of time. So please allow me to introduce Eitan. A global citizen and founder of the Nati branding agency in Tel Aviv, Eitan has been delivering international brands for over 25 years, working with brands including Google, Apple, Facebook, and I'm That Jew, and more. He's been an Israel advocate forever, and since October 7th has shifted gears to full-time Israel advocacy. The Knesset recently honored Eitan with a Voices of Iron Award for defending Israel online. His reach is global, and he's a frequent guest on top-tier international media, including with Chris Cuomo on News Nation and our hero, Aaron Molan, formerly of Sky News Australia. Eitan lives in Israel with his lovely life and wife.
She liked that.
And two beautiful kids. Eitan, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you for being that Israel defending, anti-Semitism fighting, life loving Jew.
Thank you. It's really nice to be here. Thank you.
Okay. So I have to be that Jew who steals your shtick. Let's start off with you completing the sentence. I'm that
Jew.
Okay. Well, that was the shortest answer I've ever received. You are that. Okay.
Thanks. I think it's kind of sums it up, don't you think?
It does and it doesn't. So let me follow up with that question. What does being a Jew mean to you?
You know, Shai, I was on Shai's show, Shai Davidai, and he asked me a question, and I spent a lot of time thinking about it, and he teased me. He was like, "But you wrote 'I'm That Jew.' Why is it taking you so long?" It's everything. I mean, it's everything. It's very hard to separate the heritage and the culture and the belief and the values and the, you know, whether, you know, in my case, I'm not religious, but there is an aspect of religion and spirituality as well. It's in every cell in my body. It's me. So when someone says, "What does it mean to be Jewish?" I feel like saying, it means that I'm being me, you know? So that's what it is, I guess. And that's why I'm That Jew is as long as it is and could have been much, much longer, because it's everything.
I can completely relate, and I want to just stack on that. You say you're not religious, so different people have different definitions of what it means to be religious. What do you mean when you say that?
I mean, like, I'm not a devout Jew. I don't pray. I don't go to the synagogue every week. I'm not kosher, but at the same time, I do celebrate most of the Chagim. I do not kind of stray too much from my identity, but on a very my Jewish religious identity. But I'm just secular, you know. I'm not a devout religious person at all. I didn't grow up religious. I'm secular, traditional.
I think the reason I ask is because I've had a lot of pushback, isn't the word, but most people consider me to be the most religious person they know, which is so funny because, like, I teach yoga in like short shorts and a tank top, and I touch men when I'm teaching, and I don't keep the Shabbat, and I am kosher by default because I'm a very, very, very strict vegan. Because I'm a very strict vegan. So it's funny that people think of me as religious. And so I think, to me, religion versus observance, which I think is what you were referring to more, meaning that I'm very connected to my God and to my people. And like you said, it defines me from a cellular level. It's who I am. And so, so I always said to everybody, always, but I'm not even religious. And they're like, "Yes, you are." And then over time, I've come to accept that I actually am, even if not very observant, I'm very religious. And I also try to adhere so fully to really like the 10 commandments or the 613 mitzvot, the ones that I know of just being a good person, as an extension of my Judaism, that I think does make one perhaps religious, even if you drive on Shabbat.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's whatever, like, who owns that? Who owns what religious is, you know, I guess on a very, you know, on a deeper level. But to me, yeah, I guess it was the simple, I'm not observant. But then I observe a lot of things, you know. It's just, I don't, you know, it's not 100%. It's sometimes 50, sometimes 40, sometimes 60, you know, like I fast on Yom Kippur. But you know, it's, everyone has their own kind of attachment in a way.
Exactly.
So, yeah. And that's why I think it's very hard to put us in a box. Which is why I don't want us to be in a box. I mean, the only box that we're in is Jew, which is, as far as I'm concerned, great. You know,
I love the
I like
Jew.
That box. Yeah, I like it too. You know,
agree. So, in the last 17 months, in particular, since obviously 10/7, October 7th, watching the savage brutality of our enemies, it's become startlingly clear who we are, but also who we're not. So let me ask you in the negative, who aren't you? Jew?
Who aren't I?
Yeah.
I'm not hateful. I think that's the first thing. Like, I don't think I'm a hateful person. I'm not intolerant, you know. I think those two are the big ones, you know. Like, when it comes to my identity, I try not to. It's not that I try not to hate. It takes a lot for me to hate something. And I try and listen, I try and hear, I try and up my tolerance. And it's not always easy, but I try. I think those are the things that I'm not hateful and intolerant. And I'm also, I don't think I have, I'm not unhopeful. The way of saying I'm hopeful, you know, but
yeah, does that mean you're hopeful or does it mean you're not unhopeful? The use of a double negative is a very specific choice of words.
I think I'm not unhopeful. I think I have hope.
Cautiously optimistic, perhaps.
Optimistic.
Okay.
Optimistic. Realistically, not cautiously. I mean, in the long run, I'm optimistic.
Okay, so it's being a Jew in the diaspora, it's been painful enough to see the backlash that's occurred in the world against Israel and the broader Jewish community since October 7th. It's been mind-boggling, it's been sickening. It's been confusing and angering. It's been so many things. But it's interesting to hear somebody, and not just somebody, I mean, this tends to be the overwhelming response, not necessarily those specific words, from Israel in the face of a lot of hate and intolerance that happens to be going on in the world around us, to say that what you aren't, you are not hateful, you are not intolerant. Do you feel like the behaviors of the world around us have driven you to those things? Do you feel like that's always as how you've defined it? Can you talk a little bit about just the general Israeli response to the hate and intolerance that happens to be sort of consuming so much of the Western world right now?
There's a couple of questions in there. I think maybe I'll talk about the Israel one first.
Okay.
I think that a lot of Israelis here, the Israelis that live in Israel, weren't aware of the level of animosity towards the Jewish people. I don't think much of the Jewish world was ready for that level of hate. But at the same time, we know how much our enemies hate us in our neck of the woods. We just didn't see it manifest like this in a really, 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 really long time at such scale. And it was shocking, of course. And it woke us all up. It woke us all up on the right, in the middle, and especially on the left, you know, because of who Hamas killed. And we didn't just kill, but were merciless in their savagery with killing people who really wanted, like all of us do, really wanted peace, but they were like the peace camp, you know. That really sent the country reeling into a reality that a lot of us have not really looked in the face for a while. And we have it here. As things have, I wouldn't say calmed down, because things are not exactly calm, with hostages still there, with the potential of us rolling into Judea and Samaria and into Gaza. Things are not calm. The looming Iranian threat, you know, all of these things are still going on, but it's not as terrifying as it was in the first few months, you know, in terms of what was going on. We were so focused on what was going on here. So your average Israeli, I think that's what we were focused on. But now, as things are, like I said, not exactly calm, but different, I think we're starting to feel, I mean, your average Israeli is starting to feel just how bad it is. And of course, we saw that with the politics, you know, with the previous president that a lot of people had an issue with here in Israel, and what he gave and what he didn't give. And now you have the current president, and you see what he's giving and not giving. So people are much more aware of the sentiments. And I'm hoping that the silver lining here is that your diaspora Jew and your Israeli Jew start to come together a little bit more, that could be a silver lining. We'll see. You had another question, but I can't remember what it was now. But
I think that a word that just came to mind that oddly enough has not come to mind in 17 months and I think summarizes it the most is I guess I feel even from afar, and I can only imagine how amplified it would be if you live in Israel, is crestfallen. That the Jewish people, the Israeli people, were subjected to the most horrifying massacre and orgy of evil seen in the West since the Holocaust, and the world's response was to turn on the Jewish people, on the victims. And I think
I don't know if that's true. I mean, I know it is absolutely true, but I mean, I don't know that that's the reason. I don't think that the world turned on us. I just think that our enemies did an outstanding job in painting a picture that is false. So you have the haters, and they're the haters, but you have who the haters influenced with the plan that they implemented. And that is why a lot more people hate us. Now, I'm very careful with the language of the world turned its back on us. I don't think the world really knows who we are. And I think that our enemies have managed to paint a picture that the world believes. And they were ahead of the curve. They envisioned something. They brought it to life. They invested in it. They had a pool of people and an audience that they grew and grew and grew over the course of a long, long time. A lot of work, a lot of money. And so I don't know that the world turned its back on us. That's what it feels like for us, of course. But I think a lot of it is because of perception. I think a lot of it is because of perception. But the bottom line is, yes, we were abandoned by the world.
Yeah. And I don't, in fact, I shouldn't even say the world, because all polls suggest that a vast majority of the Western world stands with Israel and the Jewish people. In America, the polls come consistently in the 80% range. It's the matter of who's screaming the loudest, and that 20% is so loud. But I think that anybody who's been following this conflict for a long time, like I have, like you have, like so many people have, knew that the narrative was going to turn on Israel. I mean, that first day, all of us said, okay, we'll give it 2-3 weeks, right? I mean, Shapiro was saying that, and you know, Prager was saying, all the people were saying that. We all knew that. That wasn't the surprise. I was saying that, and I'm just Shauna Meyerson in Los Angeles, California, right? I knew. It's nothing new. But something deep inside of me at least thought for a minute, now they'll understand. Now the world will understand what we're really fighting for, what we're really up against. And within hours, We have, you know, dozens of organizations at Harvard saying they place the blame squarely on Israel. And you have people dancing in London for the massacre of Jews in Israel. And the blood's not even dry. And the Hamas is still rampaging in the south. And I think it was a stark wake-up call. The anti-Semitism was not created that day, but it was, for some reason, given a voice that it was finally okay. And I think that being in the diaspora is different from being in Israel, where it's like, we just took this unconscionable blow. Like, how can anybody possibly turn against this moment?
It's really, it comes down to what you're brought up to believe. And what a lot of people have been brought up to believe are a lot of awful things about us. And it comes from a real base of hatred. It comes from a base of a culture that hates the Jews, that, I mean, it's not just people crying about anti-Semitism. I mean, in the Arab Muslim world, there's a real hatred and intolerance of the Jewish people that has been intensified over the last 100 odd years, but goes back hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. And so there's an indoctrination of hatred and intolerance. And it's something that a lot of people don't feel comfortable talking about because of this PC world. But, you know, I think that Bill Maher is a great spokesperson for this particular subject. It is what it is. There is a correlation between hatred of the Jewish people and Muslim culture, because it's something that is taught, and there are a lot of Arab Muslims. So when you have this decades long history of conflict, which is not based on land, it's based on a refusal to accept the Jewish people. Period. I'm not even talking about the land of Israel. Just to, you know, I can tell you, I'm half Iraqi. My father survived the Falhud, which is, you know, the equivalent of a Polish pogrom. Which, by the way, when you say pogrom or you say Falhud, people don't understand. These were massacres, just because people were Jewish.
Right.
So that just exists. It just exists, and it's always existed, and I think that, especially in the West, American Jews got a little bit too comfortable over the last 30 years, just being, you know, assimilating. And I don't mean assimilation with marriage. I mean, just like assimilating into the culture, which I think is important and necessary, but to the point where you forget who you are. And when you forget who you are, or you don't express who you are, or you depart from who you are openly, then over time, there's a vacuum of your voice. There's a vacuum of you saying who you are. And then you have people on the other side who are behind the scenes and under the rug. They're shitting on you. You know, they're shitting on your name. And then, you know, so they have their voice and they have their story about us. And then us with our story, we're just like, we keep it to ourselves. We're not open about it. We might not hide it, but we've never been outwardly, hey, we're Jewish, you know, that's not our way. And in time, it gets to a stage where for many, many reasons, it kind of like exploded. And one day you wake up as a Jewish person and you're like, wow, why do all these people not like me? They don't like you because they don't know you, because you haven't ever spoken up about who you are, you know? And so it doesn't surprise me personally, because I've been doing this for quite a while, and every few years in a conflict, you know, I do go to the chat rooms on Facebook, my God, the old platform, and I see what Kanye West supporters were saying 5 years ago or 4 years ago when he was really getting a bit crazy with what he was saying. And you just saw in the tens of thousands of comments this open anti-Semitism. So I've known that it's there, and it's only growing. It's very difficult to wake up to that, but that's a good thing. Ultimately, right now, it's not good and it's not pleasant, and I'm not happy about it. But better to be aware of it And to act on it and to wake up from the apathy and the silence of the Jewish people, than to continue on this path. Then one of the reasons that I say that I'm hopeful is because I look at how we're fighting. I look at how we're fighting, and we don't talk about that enough, but we are fighting, you know? And when I say fighting, I don't mean Israel.
Mm-hmm.
I mean Jewish people, and I don't think enough, but they are fighting back. We are saying we are Jewish. We are saying we're not going anywhere. We're saying we are right. We're saying that we're going to defeat our enemies. We're saying that we are going to wear our identity openly. And I think that that is something that in the long run, we have to keep doing forever, and never, ever, ever let that hatred take us by surprise again. Because we let down our guard, Sana, with who we are and with the investment of our story so that other people can see who we are. And when you do that, you will pay for it. And we're paying for it.
So to that, I'll say, yes, complacency has become dangerous, but it shouldn't have to be that way. Name another people who have to spend their life explaining to the world who they really are. And the answer is no one.
Okay. But it is what it is. You know, yeah. That is the situation. And
sure.
When people say that, I have this tendency to be like, okay, but that's what it is. So what are we going to do? You know?
Exactly. So yes, you're right that for, I think, the predominance of the world Jewish community outside of Israel, October 7th was our wake-up call. I want to get back to your short film for a moment, or for more than a moment. I know that the Charlie Hebdo shooting, followed by the kosher grocery store, prompted the film. I'm wondering now, was that also like your wake-up call, your wake-up moment? Or maybe as an Israeli, you guys are always awake.
It wasn't my wake-up call. I think my wake-up call was when I was in elementary school in Hong Kong, and the kids started, you know, marching around me saying Heil Hitler, or Dirty Jew, or when I went to Camden Town in London to a Jewish school, and we used to get kind of like roughed up a little bit, or... I mean, there have been many incidents, many times where I've experienced it, and I've always felt it. And I'm not the type of person that is usually afraid to face things. So, I never really ran away from a situation. I just didn't, for whatever reason, not because I'm brave, but just because I didn't, because maybe I was stupid. Because I like being who I am. I want to be able to be who I am openly. And that's not Eitan, I'm that Jew. That's just like Eitan, you know, just like that's who I am. Not everything is about me being Jewish, you know.
Sure.
So this kind of like desire to be open and to live an open life is really what drives me. So I kind of like face things head on. And actually the first time where I really took it head on in the digital space was, I believe, maybe around, I don't know exactly the year, I think it's like 13 years ago, or maybe 12, 13, 14 years ago, where I wrote a piece called Shalom Motherfucker. And it was because a friend of mine or a colleague of mine wrote some pretty anti-Semitic things disguised as anti-Israel things. On Facebook, when me and my wife and my baby were, you know, I think, yeah, it was 12 years ago. We're in a bomb shelter. It's like, guy won't write to see how I'm doing. He'll just shit all over my country without knowing anything. So I just deleted him from my friends. I just deleted. And this was at a time where, you know, 12 years ago, where some of the people writing about the conflict now were like you know, they were like 7 years old. People didn't just delete people, and people weren't talking on social media the way that people talk today. It really was a place for family and fun pictures and jokes and all that stuff. And so I deleted him, and he wrote to me, and he was like, you know, I saw that you deleted me. And he said, as a Jew, you should know that genocide is never justified. That's what he said to me back then about us. And then I sat down and I wrote Shalom Motherfucker. And Shalom Motherfucker was basically the whole purpose was, it was a letter to him without naming him. I've never named him, and I won't. But the idea was, if you're not going to be with me in my time of need and hold all these double standards against me, but not against anyone else, then Shalom Motherfucker. That was the point. And that was when I started to see online with him and with other people like him, like pockets of real, like brainwashing, like literally people who had been brainwashed by propaganda, because I was living here and I know what's happening here and you have no idea. And then there was another war, and then there was another war, and then there was another war. And with every conflict, the social media advocacy grew, because a lot of people don't know that I've been active for as long as I have been. It's kind of like I've always experienced these pockets of anti-Semitism, and they've just been growing and growing and growing. And now it's exploded. And anti-Semitism is interesting, because to me, I mean, I'm sure there, you know, there are many kinds of like Yossi Klein Halevi, who is, I'm a huge fan of. He talks about anti-Semitism so eloquently. But to me, there's like pure Jew hatred, and you're just like, you just don't like Jews. And then there are anti-Semites who are not even aware that they're anti-Semites, because they don't hate Jews. They don't dislike Jews even, but they hold us to a double standard because of culture. So there's that anti-Semitism, which I think we're seeing a lot of right now. It's not all Jew hatred, I don't think. But a lot of it is, it starts with Jew hatred, and then, well, they need to answer for this where no one else needs to. So, you know, that's something that I've been seeing a lot of too. That's something that none of us were ready for, this kind of wave of anti-Semitism.
Sure. I guess another like sad commentary is that when you started just talking about your friend and he confronted you and said, quote unquote, as a Jew, immediate question was, is he Jewish? Now you talking it
half Jewish.
Half Jewish.
Half Jewish. Half Jewish.
And so, yeah, there's this double sadness of really self-hating Jews that start all their sentences with, as a Jew, like, I represent the Jewish people, and this is, you know, my condemnations of my own people. But then there's also external factors where people who aren't Jewish at all, and your friend is half Jewish, but who also want to tell us, like, as a Jew, like, don't tell me what a Jew is, because I happen to be the Jew in the room. So I get it. And I also want to say something as a side note, when you said you don't know if you're brave or stupid, because the funny thing is, I always say in my yoga classes, I actually use that exact thing. I'm like, if you want to succeed at any of this, there's a fine line between bravery and stupidity. And I say that all the time. So it was interesting to see that coming back at me.
Yeah, and it's really not bravery. I think to me, it's like I like taking pictures, you know. I'm not a photographer, but you know, I'm a creative type. I like taking pictures, and sometimes I see something, and I'm not a professional photographer, but I see something and I got to get the shot, even if it means lying down in the street and pointing my camera up because I see something in a tree. I'll find a way to do it, because that's kind of like, I want to live a life that's authentic to me. And yeah, but you have to be careful, you know, you have to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah, your attention to detail. I mean, I think that, so I've probably listened to everything that you've ever said or written about the actual film.
Really? Wow.
I do my research, let's put it this way, and I followed you, but I do my research. So I understand like the context, the intention, and you could go into the I'm That Jew project, but I think that was what was most remarkable to me when it comes to paying attention to detail, is that even the length of the film was not random.
That's true. Yeah, it was 6 minutes. Yeah, it was 6 minutes. So, I mean, I'll state the obvious, but it was, I wanted to commemorate 6 million people. So, against a lot of advice, by the way, because a lot of people, I've talked about this, a lot of people said it's too long. And I was like, but I got a lot to say. So I said it all, and I just did what I felt was right for my heart, you know. So yeah, 6 minutes.
Okay, so for those people, that 6 million people, believe it or not, when you look at the Holocaust education out there and how few people have it, 6 million people, believe it or not, is not obvious what you're referring to a lot of people. So who are 6 million people?
Yeah, so, you know, as we know, 6 million Jewish people were singled out in Europe by the Nazis. And as they tried to take over the world, they started massacring the Jews. It was what they called the final solution, to eliminate from planet Earth every single Jewish person. And 6 million innocent Jewish civilians from all sorts of countries were exterminated. They weren't killed in a war. They were exterminated, and it was planned and orchestrated and executed. That's 6 million people in the space of a couple of years because of the Nazis. And something that a lot of people don't know, that I talk a lot about, is the fact that jihadism, I call it jihadism or radical Islam, is not just an extreme and virulent strain of Islam. It's heavily influenced by the Nazis because of Hitler meeting with quite a few Muslim leaders in the Middle East to discuss with them the final solution, which would have been implemented should the Middle East have fallen. So there is a connection to the ideology of jihadism today and radical Islam and the Nazis.
Would you say that the Holocaust was also like a significant inspiration, such an awkward word, inspiration for the project as well? Or was that sort of more of a backstory than at the forefront of your mind?
It's all, you know, as by the way, I want to go back to what you said about saying as a Jew. I actually don't like that people say, oh, these health things, and say as a Jew, because I say as a Jew all the time. Okay. And I was about to, I was like, and then I was like, oh, you know, so I might just say that. But you know, as a Jew, it's always there. You know, the Holocaust is always there for me. It's always in there somewhere. And I didn't lose anyone in the Holocaust. You know, my father was Iraqi. My father is Iraqi. My mother is Bulgarian, and the Bulgarians were spared, and the Iraqis, you know, the Nazis didn't get to Iraq. The catalyst really for the piece was, as you know, because you've done your research, a friend of mine was afraid of being openly Jewish in France after Charlie Hebdo, as you talked about, which was a chat that we had, and she was like, I'm too scared to say I'm Jewish. And then I sat down that evening and I just wrote I'm That Jew, kind of like as a letter to her, kind of like in my head, which is like, this is who we are, and we're going to be okay if we remember that and we are kind of like, say it, I'm That Jew. But yeah, I think that the Holocaust even as I told that story now about my friend, it, whenever you think about bad things that can happen, you in this, in our generation or previous relatively close generations, we've thought about the Holocaust, you know. So it is, maybe it was heavily influenced by it. I mean, it's in there, and I talk about it in there, but there are so many things. It's a part of our suffering and the attempted extermination of us as a people over the course of many, many periods in our history are a part of our narrative. But there's so many other parts as well, you know. So I try not to let that define us. It's a part of us.
Yes, and as important as the suffering is, I think that the Jewish story of the Holocaust is one of rising above the ashes. I mean, we just saw the oldest Holocaust survivor just pass this week at 113 years old. It's amazing because the people who survived, I mean, I can only imagine what it would have taken to survive the concentration and death camps. But those people, the number of them who have lived to see 100 or more years is so remarkable and such a personal affront to these attempts. We never, as Jews, want our story to be that of victims. We are survivors, not oppressors. We are survivors. And in this world where everyone has to be oppressed or oppressor, a ridiculous binary that is so antithetical to reality, we are neither. We have been victims, but we became survivors and thrivers. And the miracle of the state of Israel is the greatest testament to that.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's an absolute truth. You know, when we say survivors and thrivers, you know, I always try and think of simpler words for me because then it's easier for me to digest it. But mm-hmm. when I sit down and I break it down, it's just like, what does that actually mean? I think we're builders. We're builders. We're creators. You know, Nas Daily. Do you know the guy, Nas? Do you know him?
Give me some context.
He's a well-known Arab Israeli influencer who went around the world making these 1-minute videos. I'm sure you've seen them. And when at the end, he always says, you know, and that's 1 minute. See you tomorrow. So he made all these videos, and he's Arab, you know, but he's Israeli. He's Israeli Arab, and over the period of the last year and a half, he's been very vocal in his support for the values of the Jewish people and the values of the state of Israel. And the reason I bring him up is because he said something very interesting around a week ago, or maybe 2 weeks ago. I don't know when you'll air the podcast, but from today, around a week or two ago, where he said that after October 7th, a lot of people were putting pressure on him, you know, always, because his work has been seen in the billions. And, you know, to be in a position where you're Israeli, but you're not Jewish and you're an Arab, you know, you're not embraced by the Jewish people and you're a sellout maybe to your people. It's a very difficult position for him to be in, with the reach that he has as a social media influencer. And in the interview, he said something. He said, you know, I was being put under such pressure. And, you know, I just said, I believe in two things, and I've become very extreme. You know, he said, I've become extreme as well. But the extremity in my worldview is I've divided the world into two camps. He said something like this. One is you're a destroyer. And the other camp is you're a builder. And he's like, I'm a builder. So anything that is in that world of building, that's me. And I think that's ultimately the Jewish people. The Jewish people are builders, they're creators, they're doers, they're hustlers, you know. We roll up our sleeves and we get to work. It's not just resilience, it's a spirit. We can't afford to be bums. We can't afford to be lazy. We can't afford to be complacent. We can't afford to be comfortable. We can't afford to just sit back and you know, and that's the blessing and the curse, you know, but I think that, that we're, like you said, we're survivors and we're thrivers. We're doers. We make shit happen. I really do think so. I think that's in our, in our DNA, not everyone, not every single Jew in the world, but that's, that those are our values.
Mm-hmm.
Our values are about
building,
making things, you know, making shit happen.
Yeah. Finding solutions.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I don't know the figures, but we are punching so far above our weight class when it comes to, for example, Nobel Prizes, particularly in the sciences. Like, we're 0.02% of the world, and we have something like 30 or 40 or 50% of the Nobel Prizes. And you know, again, like, you're right. We build, we create, we find solutions.
I mean, people who don't know the Jewish people, and we don't need to go into the story of it, because I know that we don't have time to talk about it all, but there's the Jewish, they own all the land, they're money grabbers. And then there's other Jews, they own Hollywood, you know? Well, no, the Jews do not own Hollywood. We do not own Hollywood, but we did create Hollywood. And there's a whole story about how we created Hollywood, and people should read the story of how the Jews that escaped the Holocaust literally created Hollywood. And, you know, a little bit of respect, a little bit of gratitude, a little bit of like, okay, these people are, they're the shit, you know, they get shit done. They make things that affect us too. But it means that we need to speak more, and not like I just did, not arrogantly, you know, and not facetiously, but I think we need to speak up more about who we are and what drives us and why we are the way that we are, and not to let people who hate us, and honestly, who I think are envious of us, define us to other people, you know, and for us to just like let that happen. It's the dumbest thing ever. Honestly, you get what you deserve. I think I'm not saying that we deserved this. We certainly didn't deserve October 7th, and we didn't deserve this kind of treatment, but we made some mistakes, and I think that we should own up to them, and we should now be aware of them, and now we should get to work and fix them. And fixing them means let people know who we are. Let people hear who we are from us. And that's what I'm That Jew is. And that's actually what I'm trying to create.
And as a branding expert, it makes a lot of sense. Really quickly, we're closing in on an hour. How are you doing on time? Because I have 5,000 questions left, and I could ask one or two of them, or we could continue this.
No, we can. Let's keep going a little bit, and then... yeah, I think we're good. I think let's keep going.
Like a 10 or 15 minute warning so I could get to the good stuff.
I know, it's good. It's nice to talk to you.
You're such a pleasure to talk to. And it's interesting that you would bring up the Hollywood thing, because I actually, we talked about this last week when I had my episode with Jonah Platt, who obviously comes from a huge entertainment family.
Hey, I mentioned him. He's great. He's a lovely guy.
He honestly is one of the most humble, unpretentious, like just simply kind-hearted people that I've come across. Everyone that I've met in this podcast has been such a gift. But he's a special soul. But we did talk about the Hollywood thing. Okay, so here's, considering that I'm That Jew is doing the circuit again. People are watching it again. They're sharing it again. They're relating to it again. They're talking about it again. Can you tell me a little bit from your viewpoint, like, what similarities and differences do you see in like the social climate in 2015 when you made the film versus 2025 today?
When I made I wrote the piece I think it was 2014, and then I made the piece over the course of almost a year, and then I released it in 2015, in October 2015. And the climate back then was, like I said to your viewers, people weren't expressing their Jewish identity openly on social media. It wasn't... Social media back then wasn't toxic like it is today. There's so much hatred, there's so much division, And for people who, you know, are today on TikTok or on Instagram or, you know, or whatever it is, 12 years ago-ish, you know, 11, 12 years ago, it wasn't hateful. It wasn't divisive. It wasn't toxic. Yeah. It was a relatively pleasant place, you know. Instagram was for pictures and it was fun. And Facebook was for your family and for your friends. And it was very difficult for a lot of people when there were some conflicts back then when people would not speak up about it to defend Israel in a war, which happened when I wrote Shalom Motherfucker, because it was in Tzuk Eitan, which is a war we had with Hamas. And Charlie Hebdo, if you know, when that happened, okay, it was a massacre at a French publication of Charlie Hebdo, but the kosher supermarket killing was they targeted a kosher supermarket. It was targeting Jews, and the world wasn't up in arms. And with our war, the world wasn't up in arms. So the climate back then was people were uncomfortable, like really, really uncomfortable. So when I put out I'm That Jew, and I did it on Facebook. And I wasn't anonymous about it. I said, my name is Eitan Chetayat and I'm That Jew. And I wrote something and here was the film. What happened was it went viral on Facebook and people started sharing it. And when you share it on Facebook, there were no like kind of fake accounts like there are today. If you, Shana, would have shared it, which maybe you did, your name would appear on it. Be like, yeah, Shana just shared this and she's saying I'm That Jew. The climate over the past 10 to 12 years has been steadily, as we talked about, getting more pockets of anti-Semitism, more, you see it more and more and more. And when this exploded, there's been the shock, the initial shock of the silence. And then as we talked about the wake-up call that so many of us feel, not enough of us, I mean, we all feel it, but not enough of us are doing something about it. But the climate has changed in that it's so in your face now. It's so every Jew's problem now. I think there's already a Jewish renaissance. You know, the first thing that you do when you feel this kind of attack and silence in the face of what we've seen is an attack on who we are. You know, you're complicit if you don't speak up about this. So when you see that level of shock to these, such a level of violence that happened, and such a level of silence, and such a level of no resistance to the silence, no resistance to these stupid, you know, students on campuses in America, no resistance to the blatant anti-Jewish sentiments on the street, then you, like, you can't really hide from that anymore. You have to face it. And I think that's where we are. And I think, again, I'm not saying it's a good thing, but better that we face it than we pretend it isn't there. And I think that's the difference in the climate. Around a decade and a half ago, you're just like, oh, do-do-do, you know, I'll get on with my life. And now, no, you don't get to do that anymore.
I agree. And the silence has been deafening. It's funny. In November 2018, which was about 3 years after your short film came out, there was like yet another spike in worldwide anti-Semitism. And each time it gets worse and worse. And I think that was the time that sort of knocked me off my feet of like, what is going on here? Because that's when I started seeing it in the yoga community, the world of love and light. And I'm like, what the heck? So I actually in November 2018 initiated a hashtag I am a Jew too campaign. Not I am. It's so funny. I wrote I am and Carrie's like, no, it's I'm. I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry. I'm glad.
That's okay.
I'm actually really glad she pointed that out.
It's like that. Yeah, it's like that.
Exactly.
By the way, people might ask where they can get this, because
Yeah.
I'm always asked afterwards. It's sweetpoppylane.com. Sweetpoppylane.com, you can get this. Wow. That's the only place that I sell it. There's a lot of fakes, but that's the, and proceeds go to, some of the proceeds go to an Israeli charity. So Sweet Poppy Lane, if anyone wants it. Yes, but it's I'm there too.
I'll have to put that in the show notes. Sweet Poppy Lane.
Yeah.
Shirts. Okay, I'll put that in the show notes for anyone who missed that. So anyway, I had this hashtag I am a Jew too campaign, and it was really just a positivity campaign. And it starts out basically saying, like, if you like me, you like a Jew. And I talked about, you know, just how Jewish values sort of create who I am. And it was really, there was nothing negative. It was just like, this is who I am. And you follow me. And guess what? You know, because most people in the world who hate Jews have never met a Jew. And that's actually been proven. So anyway, I did this in 2018 on Instagram and Facebook. And yes, anti-Semitism was raging, but it hadn't been normalized yet like it is today, much like what you're talking about. And thousands of people participated, Jews and non-Jews, Muslims. I mean, it was crazy how many people like took part, many more than I ever expected. Now, flash forward to June 2024, last summer, where I attempted to launch a similar anti-Semitism awareness campaign. It was called hashtag Yogis Only Love, because again, of what I was seeing, the vitriol coming from the yoga community was so disturbing, and only about a dozen people joined in. And it wasn't the least bit surprising, actually, but it's still shocking. And social media has, like, it's devolved into this like cesspool of Jew hatred and intimidation, and in the vast majority of people, as you said, are maybe they're afraid to speak up, maybe they're unwilling to speak up, maybe they don't care to speak up, which boggles my mind. So I'm That Jew has gotten, from my understand, somewhere in the vicinity of well over 5 million views. Is that accurate?
Oh, the film has been seen on different platforms around 15 million times. And the actual work that I've been doing has been seen, I think it's 270 million times, 270 million times or something, almost 300, something like that.
Okay,
that's all the work that I've been doing.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, that qualifies as well over 5 million. So I'm wondering, like, so what do you see as the role of, like, passive viewing, like people who are just watching, enjoying being touched by, maybe not being touched by the I'm That Jew short film, versus those who refuse to be silent, who are actively posting and participating in social media? Like, how much of a role does touching hearts, like, change the world?
Well, that's a great question. I think that when you... when you want to speak to the world about who you are, it's not going to be possible as a people unless more of us do it. And I think that the challenge 12 years ago was that it filled you with pride, and maybe you shared it, but then you went about your life. And it's the same with not just I'm That Jew, any Jewish pride stuff. Mm-hmm. Today, because of everything that we've seen before our very eyes, all of us, we all know that we cannot be silent. Whether we are comfortable enough to get out of our comfort zone or not is different to what we know must be done. If there's something life-threatening, then to me, of course, you have to hide, you have to survive. But so long as it's not life-threatening, and if you're walking down the street in your high street in, you know, in Delaware somewhere, or in, you know, you have a choice to make. And I think more of us need to think about that and face that fear and decide on an individual level what we're going to do about that fear that we have. My opinion is that in order to build the strength of our people back, and I'm talking about the people, the Jewish people all over the world, not here in Israel, all over the world, we need to get in touch with our identity, understand on an individual level what it means to each of us, what it is to be Jewish for each of us on a very individual level, and then to hopefully express it, because to express it means to show who you are, as opposed to, like, I don't like to use the word hide, because in America, maybe until now, people didn't hide who they were, but they didn't exactly, you know, wear it on their sleeve, maybe, or, you know, say it loud, I'm Black and I'm proud. I mean, when was the last time a Jew kind of, like, you know, was like, it's not all of us, we're more, you know. So to me, one of the keys to our survival really is us speaking up. And that's something that doesn't just happen. You know, I'm a one-man show, and, you know, my wife has been helping me a lot with, you know, I kind of like stopped my business to do what I'm doing to try and send a message, which is we need to be vocal, but it needs to be pushed. It needs to be fed. It needs to be invested in. It needs to be spread. It needs to be, you know, people need to be inspired to do it. And that takes vision. It takes sweat. It takes, you know, hard work, and it takes money. But to be honest, if to the naysayers who don't see that as a solution that will help Jewish strength, I say, look at our enemies and look at what they did. They built their narrative, and they invested in it, and they had a vision, and they got people on the ground, and they did it for many and many years, and they're still doing it, and we didn't. So I believe that we all need to understand that it's important to have security. It's important to support Israel. It's important to support Jewish communities and their safety and all of that stuff. But it's also very, very, very important for us to reconnect with what being Jewish is to us, each and every one of us, to talk about it and build our community and to get to know each other, which I think that we don't enough. And there's a bit of a renaissance now. There's look at this, you know, you and I are talking. We're bonding over our common, you know, our commonalities in terms of identity. We do that. One, two, with the next, you also start to bring your allies in. You start to be open with your allies. And then you get stronger because you feel, okay, well, these people know me now, you know, but no one's going to get to know us unless we help them get to know us. So I think it's really a time of all hands on deck, but something needs to change. New things need to be built. And that's my vision behind I'm That Jew. I mean, I'm trying to create a movement, an organization, a platform, call it whatever you will, but it's a place where Jewish people all over the world, its mission is to help Jewish people all over the world feel more comfortable being openly Jewish. Because when you're more openly Jewish, you feel stronger, you feel more empowered, you can reach out to people, they'll reach back out to you because you have that in common. And the people who share our values will be there too. And in time, our voice will be more powerful. And we didn't have a voice, and we still don't have a voice. And it's very hard to fight a voice that has been invested in with hatred for 30 years now, you know, and more. And what have we done? So we need to do that. We just need to do that. It's a weapon. It's a defense. It's your identity. If you don't speak up for yourself, and if you don't fight, because we're outnumbered too, fight against the hatred, and as a basic starting point, as a way of life, because it is what it is. We can complain about it, but there's 16 million of us, 0.02%. That's it. All of us have to be like 1,000, like 10,000 Jews. If we don't do that, and we don't make that a priority, we'll be in this situation over and over and over again. We need to invest in our story. We need to make sure that people know who we are, and not other people telling us who we are and lying to the world about who we are. And the only people who can do it, it's us. It's us. We just need to create something that we can all kind of like rally behind. And it should represent all of us. And that's what I'm That Jew is, really. That's what I'm trying to create, to get people to be more comfortable with who they are, so that we don't feel shut up. We don't feel abandoned. We don't let anyone abandon us, you know?
I guarantee that there are multitudes of Jews on earth today who dusted off the Magen David that they got from their bar bat mitzvah or their mezuzah and put it on because of you and because of your film. So.
Oh, wow. That's a big, I don't know, but thank you. I'd like to think that it helped, at least.
I guarantee it. Eitan, I actually want to get into a whole like discussion on branding, because that's your thing. However, we are running long on time, and you have been so generous with me. And I always like to end on a high and inspirational point. So I would love to invite you back for that conversation if you're open to it at a later date. But for right now, my heart is feeling so full. And
wow.
You just like came out with that, you know, just such a powerful ending really to this conversation, that I feel it would only mitigate it to segue from here.
We can talk again for sure. And hopefully your viewers will like this conversation, and maybe also follow my channel on YouTube. And I'd love to come back, Shana, with pleasure. Thank you. And thank you for having me. It's been really nice.
Oh, it has been amazing. By the way, I have all your links in my show notes. I'm going to add the Sweet Poppy Lane to that as well.
Thank you.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add before we go?
No, I think that it's really nice when I know this is a podcast, but if someone watching this is like, okay, they're on YouTube, they're watching a podcast, but what they're actually watching is actually two people that don't know each other, and we're Jewish, and that's what is bonding us, and that is the reason why we started talking, and it's a beautiful thing, and I'd like to end by saying, more of this, please, more of us getting to know each other. More of you guys getting to know each other, you know, from LA to Tel Aviv, from Johannesburg to Shanghai, and from Sydney to Paris. I think we should all be getting to know each other more. Sephardis, Ashkenazis, Democratic Jews, Republican Jews, BB supporters, non-BB supporters. We're Jewish. We need to reconnect. That's what I hope for.
Thank you, Eitan. And thank you for being that Jew who has really opened the world to eyes.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me, Shana.
My pleasure.